I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. Are you ready to win at the game of life? Well, throw out that rule book and get down to the business of being the best and most authentic version of you. Welcome to the Human Design Podcast. We're changing the rules around success, abundance, purpose, love, and life, where we're creating a planet where everyone can thrive in a world that loves and supports each other. I'm your host, Emma Dunwoody, a qualified master coach, human design expert, podcaster, and entrepreneur that is living the life of my dreams, breaking all the rules while doing it, making a huge impact, and living my design and manifesting miracles on the daily. Join me as I break down and simplify everything you need to live in alignment with your human design, teach you how to recondition your unconscious mind for greatness, and to take back your power so you can manifest your heaven on earth and serve the rest of the planet at the same time. It's time to give up the fear and step into your highest potential, to reach for the stars, to know and live your greatness. It's what you deserve, and it's what the planet really needs from you. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I am super excited to talk to my guest today, because I feel like we have so many common topics that we talk about. So I'm just going to love diving super deep into the really beautiful topics of things like purpose and meaning. So Sarah Kubrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
I'm so pumped to talk to you. I also just need to let all of our listeners know that you are a 4-6 emotional generator and a cross of the vessel of love, which is super exciting. So we're going to refer back to your chart and your human design a lot, I think, in this process, because I've been listening to a couple of podcast interviews and you talk a lot about meaning and purpose and all of these beautiful things that we're going to dive into today. And I just feel like there's going to be lots in your specific human design that's going to just really support why potentially you love those topics so much. But hey, before we get to that, because I often get ahead of myself, I get overexcited, I'm a manifesting generator. Before we do that, I would really love to hear from you. Speaking of purpose, I believe all of us are on this journey. It's called the hero's journey. And in many cases, we have this challenging moment, or in my case, number of years, where there is a moment in time where we make a decision, where this thing is not going to break us, but it's going to make us. And I'd just really love to hear people's stories of maybe where their moment was, or what their thing was, their challenge that they overcame to actually become, you know, the human you are today. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, of course. So the actual moment, I would say, happened about a decade and a half after the impact itself. It's interesting how sometimes it takes us so long to figure out what has actually impacted us. But I remember being in my early 20s, sitting at a bar with a friend and chatting about life. And I was sharing all the things that I was doing, and it all sounded very lovely. And I was doing exactly what society was telling me I should be doing. And then he just paused for a second and asked me a question. And I love that he framed it as a question, because sometimes when people do things such as they're in grad school, they get married, they succeed, quote unquote, it's so easy to go, wow, I am so happy for you. Or, wow, you must be so happy. And that is such an imposition. And I've heard that for so many years by that time, like, you must be so happy. And that is something that prevented me from seeing my unhappiness. But what he did is he asked the question, are you happy? And I fully unraveled. Like, I was very emotionally unavailable at the time. I really held everything tightly. I never expressed any emotion. And there I am, crying in public in a bar in LA, just sobbing. And my friend sitting across from me in pure shock, not knowing what to do. And then I remember going to the bathroom to pull myself together. And I remember looking in a mirror and going, I don't know who this person is. I understand she's me because she's doing all the same things that I'm doing, but I feel like she's a complete stranger, and she's not just a stranger. She's a person I actively hate. And it was a really interesting moment of like, this is not it. And I hate myself so much. And I, worse than that to me was I hate my own life. I hate everything that I've designed, created, co-created, that was imposed on me, however you want to see it. I hate all of it. And I can't believe this is the way I'm living my life. And so that was a really big moment. But that moment came with a bunch of realizations. And one of them, or two of them, I shared. I didn't know who I was. I was unhappy about my life. But that also began the unraveling of a lot of childhood traumas. So I was born in Bosnia. A war started. We moved to Serbia. The NATO bombings occurred. And then we immigrated to Canada. And I thought all of that was very normal. And I thought that none of that impacted me in a negative way. And so I think facing that things like this have impacted me, there was a moment where I went, okay, well, either I'm going to drown in all of this, or I'm going to have to figure out how to reemerge from it. And so a lot of things kind of happened at the same time, a lot of realizations, a lot of hard truths. And I genuinely thought, I felt like I was existentially dying. And so it was sink or swim kind of moment for me. And thank goodness I decided I had the strength to keep swimming.
Yeah.
That was very long.
No, not at all.
Apologize.
Fantastic. No. It's so, so good. And it's so beautiful just to hear it. Because I think that I love the way that you framed it, you know, that people often say, oh, you must be so happy. And I think this is one of the challenges that so many people face, is that we build these lives, or we climb these mountains that we think we should climb or we should build. And you're right. I mean, I had those moments so many times where I'm like, I should be happy after all of this. I mean, I was diagnosed with depression and panic disorder really, really early. Well, not really, really early, in my 20s, late 20s. And, you know, like I went through this huge process of basically reprogramming my brain and healing myself. But before that, it was this, well, I'm doing all the things I was told to do. Why don't I feel different, you know? And yes. I think that we're not actually taught that as children. We're not taught as children that actually you are this individual being in there. And it's all about, life is all about really connecting to that being inside of you, and learning how that being operates in the world and how it shines in the world and what it's here to be and what it's here to do. And I love that your friend asked you the question, as opposed to, again, without realizing it, unconsciously just projecting more conditioning onto you.
Absolutely. And it was really great because he came to New York about 2 weeks before my book came out. And the first sentence in the book is that question that he asked me. And I was like, hey, do you want to read the first couple pages of the book? And he's like, oh my God, that's our conversation. And it was really special. And it was really cool because I don't think he understood what a big role he played in my journey at all, because to him, he was just asking a simple question to a friend.
Oh my goodness, I love that. I've got so many moments with friends where I've got one mentor in particular that he was like my first boss in advertising back in the day at a TV station. And there's certain things that he said over those years that to this day are like, do you remember when you sat me down and you said that thing? And he'd be like, no, nah, I've got no recollection. I was like, well, it changed my life. Like, I am who I am today because of that.
So that's, I love those moments. For sure. Well, I used to tease him a lot, because after that night, I went back to my hotel room and I was like, whew, that was a doozy. And I turned on Friends, ordered some room service, ate, and was like, now life can go back to normal. I did it. I had a bit of a crisis. I worked it out. I have no idea why I thought that was it. Poor little Sarah. I had no idea that that was just the beginning of it. And after that, I developed a panic disorder that lasted for about a year or two. And actually, the next day I was flying out to go home to Vancouver, and I had my very first panic attack on my flight. And that was really horrifying because I went into full paralysis and I had no idea what was happening. I thought I was having a stroke. I lost my ability to speak. It was incredibly scary. And now I understand that as my body communicating with me and going, okay, we gave you a little taste of how upset you are. You've decided to fully disregard it, to watch Friends, eat a burrito, and then go back to your life and intend to fully live the exact same way. And I think it was very firm, and I don't wish it upon anyone. And yet I think it saved my life. And back to my friend, I'm still like, you're the reason why I have panic. No, I'm just kidding. Sometimes I tease him. I'm like, so thanks for that. No, but I just think the human ability to deny and persevere and endure is so powerful. And sometimes it works to our advantage and sometimes it really doesn't. And for me, my stubbornness and endurance worked until it didn't, until it became my biggest detriment. And so that was an interesting switch that I saw. And I don't know, in your journey, if you saw that, of like sometimes your own strengths become something that hurt you.
Well, I love this statement because, and this question is because what I often find, especially with human design, that so often the thing that we are spending so much energy on trying to fix about ourselves and everybody, you've heard that a million times, there's nothing to fix. Is often our superpower. We're just expressing it from fear, or we're expressing it from a dysfunction or unresourceful belief systems or whatever it might be. So I think it's so important. Now, I'm super curious. You have the breakthrough. And so many of us, especially people listening, they have the breakthrough. And so many of us do exactly what you did. I did the same thing. I was like, okay, well, I am fully aware that I have this belief system and it might be an inherited belief system and I'm telling myself all of these stories and this pattern is happening. Okay, just like you, I tried to sort of ignore it, you know. Tell us a little bit about the journey, because I think sometimes people feel like, you know, we see someone like you, you know, you're not Sarah Kubrick anymore, you're Dr. Sarah Kubrick, you're the millennial therapist, like you're this big brand, if you like. How do you get from this place where you're on an airplane in paralysis, which I've got to be honest, like I've had some awful panic attacks. That just must have been the most terrifying experience, to who you are today. Like, tell us a little bit more about that journey so that people can really understand that it's not just a switch you flicked.
Oh, it is not. And I hope that my journey is encouraging, but also I'm sure it's going to feel discouraging to those who hope that it's a quick one and it's just not, or it wasn't for me. I'm sure others could do it quicker. So I had those two events that were really clear, but I still went back home and did my thing. Nothing changed. Even after my panic attack, absolutely nothing changed. I was still in grad school. I would black out in class and people just wouldn't know. I would pass out from like how bad my panic attacks were. And it was so interesting because I felt like I wasn't super functioning. And you know, in class and after class, my friends would be like, oh, you made such a good point and blah, blah, blah. Like, I really wish I could conceptualize it the way you do. And I'm not saying this to compliment myself, but I was like, they had no idea what was happening. I didn't even remember saying that. Like, we just had completely different experiences. And so no one knew what was happening. And I kept pushing, until I started cycling so frequently that I would have to pull over on a highway and stop because I was having panic attacks a couple times just getting to school. And at that point, I was like, I need to go see a therapist because I couldn't really leave my room. I was so anxious. I always had to know where the exit, like, stairwell was, and I had to know where the nearest hospital was. And it got to the point where I was just restricted to a room, couldn't really talk to people. And I realized, okay, I actually can't handle this on my own. I don't know how to, which is really, there was so much shame associated with that because I was a counseling psych student. I help people with this. And granted, you know, it was after my first year, but still there was a lot of embarrassment of like, how can I not just fix myself? And as you said, that I think that term fix is really unhelpful. And instead of being like, what is this trying to communicate with me? What am I expressing? What are my needs? How is this shaping me? I was like, I just need this to stop. So I started to see a therapist, and that was absolutely amazing and life-changing. And she's the one that pointed out to me like, hey, you have some childhood trauma, which now I chuckle because I really didn't realize it. And it's so obvious, but it's just, I didn't realize it. She's like, hey, the relationship you're in is really not working for you right now. And she just pointed a lot of things that I was too scared to see. And after that, I took some really major, I made some really major life-altering decisions. And this is where I'm very careful, where I know not everyone can do that. Not everyone wants to do that. But I was married at the time. I got a divorce. I took sabbatical from grad school. I went back to Serbia to try to figure out and face some of my childhood stuff. Started traveling. I started, I set different boundaries with different friends. I lost a lot of friendships. I kind of reconnected with my family. Like, every aspect of my life got flipped upside down, and it was slow and it was painful. And then I remember, still a year after doing all of this, still feeling like absolute crap. And still being like, I still get panic attacks sometimes. I'm still not super happy. And then the final step was really understanding myself and building that relationship with myself, because the external stuff is there and that's great. And that's going to impact your relationship with yourself. But I was so scared to get close to her and so scared to be near her and get hurt by her. And so the real work then began of like reconnecting with myself and growing into and becoming the person that I am. And that's literally what changed my life. And it was like, I don't like to use the word authenticity because I think it's overused and it's misused and it's watered down. But that one thing of being authentic was literally what changed my entire life.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love it. And just, I know that you're not really across human design or your design. And the thing that the cross of the vessel of love is all about is exactly that. It's this journey of learning to love yourself. And in this process, because you're a line six, you're a 4-6 profile, as a line six, you're the role model. So what that means is that the vessel of love, I've got a lot of people close to me that have this cross, and actually a lot of friends that have kids with this cross. And watching these kids grow up, you know, like as parents, sometimes parents can feel really uncomfortable because they go through these big times in their life where they really don't love themselves, because their whole journey is about loving themselves. And I think this is the same for everybody. We all need to learn that journey. But specifically when it comes to purpose, a large part of the purpose from a human design frame for you is this, the love of the self, the love of the spirit, the love of the body, and the love of humanity. It's this whole story of, well, it's this is what unconditional love is, when we can bring all these things together. So it certainly sounds like that's been playing out. Is that fair to say?
That sounds so pretty and beautiful. I love it. I know nothing about human design. That felt like a huge compliment. Thank you. I'm not sure that's, yeah. I'm like, that's a huge compliment. But yeah, when people talk to me about the brand of Millennial Therapist, I always kind of chuckle, because I think my whole thing about it was, I want to do advocacy work. I want to help. And I first tried doing it the way where everyone's like, okay, so what are you going to talk about? Who are you going to be online? What is going to be like your niche, your thing? And I tried that for about 2 months and I was like, I'm miserable. I don't like this. I'm not really sure what the purpose of this is. And then I went, I'm just going to be me. And I know that sounds like the most, but I was like, I'm just going to show up as authentically as possible, talk about what it means to be a human, and people are either going to resonate or they're not. And there was no other planning, no other marketing strategy except that. I had no idea what I was doing. Yes. Still probably don't. And the marketing, there's just so many theories. I was like, you know what? There is nothing more that resonates than a human experience, than the fact that like you've experienced something that someone else has experienced, the fact that we're all human, the fact that we're all struggling, the fact that we all have the same needs and desires. And so for me, it was really important to just share things from my perspective. And of course, that's colored with my education and my background and my life experience. But I think the brand of Millennial Therapist was just me for the first time being like, this is me. And I am just going to, I think me as a person is the best tool, as weird as that sounds, like that's what I can offer. And hopefully people will get something out of it.
And clearly they have. Clearly lots of people are getting a lot out of it, which is brilliant. There's also this really, there's one of the parts of the chart we call it's your core wound. And then the core wound turns into your core talent. And you actually have it in a gate. It's called Gate 7. I know this just sounds like mumbo jumbo to you. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But basically what this is all about is leadership. The 7 is this fundamental direction of a leader. And the big piece here is listening. And maybe as a kid, maybe listening was potentially an issue. Either you weren't heard or you didn't listen or you sort of ran ahead and did your own thing and noticed no one was paying attention. However, when you move through the wound and you heal the childhood trauma and you do the things, it becomes your core talent. And I think that we can see that in this brand is like when you just turned up and you were you, the way this energy of this Gate 7 works is all about listening. When you listen to the people where they want to be led to, then you become this very, very powerful leader, which I believe, you know, in my opinion, we're seeing in you and what you're creating.
Oh, that's very, very thoughtful. I do always think of it as that's really sweet. I do think of it as group effort. I love feedback. Like, I obviously not the trolls, not the haters, but I love feedback. And if someone sends me a DM or a comment that's like, I want to learn more about this, or this really didn't resonate because of such and such, I love going back and being like, why did I write it? Did I write it because I thought, okay, people will like it, it might be helpful? Did I write it because it resonated with me? And so I find that leadership does resonate with me, but I always like to think of it as a collaborative thing of me.
I love this. So
do you know what I mean?
Sorry. I'm geeking out because I'm a human design geek out because you're a line 4. So your profile is a 4-6. And in my membership community, we did these things called panels. So each part of the chart, we break it out, then we get real life experiences, right? And then when we did the panel for the line 4s and we were talking about their leadership, they all sat there and went, yeah, I wouldn't really call myself a leader, but I just like to bring everybody up with me. And I'm just like, all the line 4s don't see themselves as leaders. They're all literally, come on, everybody, let's rise together. And so and hearing you speak, I'm like, yep, there it is. There's your design again.
That's so funny. I'm going to have to read up on the design now. I'm so curious. That's wild.
Yeah, you absolutely are. You absolutely are. So cool. So I want to talk about purpose because actually, two things I specifically want to talk about, and I want to talk about the book, is I want to talk about trusting yourself, and I want to talk about purpose. These are things that I talk a lot about in my work. I feel human design, my background, I'm a master coach, so a behavioral specialist. I've worked with profiling tools, all sorts of different profiling tools, until I came across human design. I was like, wow, this is just mind-blowing. So ultimately I help people align to their authentic self. I know you don't love the word, but really their authentic self, break all the rules. It's a big part of who I am. Like I'm a rule breaker. I'm not going to do it the way I'm told to do it. I'm going to do it the way, you know, I'm going to make a mess. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes and I'm going to work it out and it's going to be much better than the way you told me to do it.
I love it. Resonates.
Really yeah. Great. Love that.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to really help people dive into, let's start with trusting themselves, because I feel like this is something that seems so simple, yet it is something that we need to go to the gym every day and build the muscle. So I'd just really love just to hear, like, how did maybe you first and foremost build that trust in yourself? And then when you're working with clients, how do you help them build trust in themselves? It's probably the same thing, but hey, I'm going to ask it that way.
Yeah. So for me, self-trust was taking care of myself, fulfilling my needs. It really boiled down to that. It was, I can trust that I'm going to show up for me, that I'm going to stand up for myself, that I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I have that streak of I have a very unconventional life. I think people close to me are like, what are you doing? I have a very unconventional life. I think life should be messy. I think that's what makes it fun. I think you should dismantle things and try to put them back together and hopefully it's better. For me, it was just going, if I say I'm going to do something, I did it. So for this is a silly example. For anxiety, my therapist is like, you should probably cut out sugar fully. So for a year, I didn't have any sugar. And I, although that's like take it or leave it, the point was that I said I would do something and then I did it. And I did it because he actually made me feel better and because he was a way to take care of myself and moderate my anxiety attacks. And so a lot of that was just taking a chance on me and knowing that like no matter what happens, I will have my own back. And I think that that takes a long time to get to that point. And I'm very happy to be at that point now. Now something might happen and I might backtrack for a bit, but I feel like regardless what happens, I don't need someone else to take care of it, to help me, to save me. I feel like there's this confidence that has been built from self-trust of like, I can do it myself. And of course, I think we should utilize our community and get all the help that we need. But I think there has to be self-trust and that foundation of self-trust. So for me, it was just really doing what I said I would do and doing the uncomfortable things when it meant meeting my own needs. And so, you know, it's for my clients.
Forget or people don't realize how these simple things have such a huge impact. You know, I talk about it is in the frame of self-integrity. In many cases, especially in women, we have this external integrity. Like if we say we're going to turn up for our kids, we do it. If we say we're going to turn up for the boss, we do it. If we say we're going to turn up for someone else, we do it. But we let ourselves down. So, you know, that piece for me, I think it's so incredibly important, like keeping those promises that we make to ourselves. And I remember reading, and I think it was in Dr. David Hawkins, but something in the, reading in there in probably Power versus Force, where he's talking about that we actually need to teach our brain that we're worth, you know, doing the hard things for, keeping the promises for. Like we have to give ourselves the evidence that we're worth it. And the moment we give the brain the evidence to say, yeah, actually, I do keep the promises because I'm my number one person in my life, then all of these greater challenges are much easier to navigate because the whole mind, body, spirit are in alignment. We're like, okay, we're all on the same team here, so we can head in this direction.
Absolutely. I think that alignment is so huge. So two things I want to say. One is when I talk to my clients about it, the word respect comes up a lot. It's respecting yourself enough. People are like, well, I don't love myself, so it's hard to do it. You don't need to love yourself. You don't even need to like yourself. That's why I think respecting yourself is so important. Let's first get you to respect yourself, because if you respect someone or something, even if you don't like them, you're more likely to show up for them. And so I think respect is a really huge one. And it's kind of the chicken and the egg. If you show disrespect to yourself, chances are other people are going to disrespect you as well. And then that's going to reinforce your own disrespect. And so to break that chain, you need to start treating yourself with respect, even if you don't feel it at first. Sometimes it truly is that. Hopefully you will feel it and that will follow, but you don't always have to be led by the emotion. Sometimes your behavior can evoke that emotion. And I think that that can be incredibly healing. And so treat yourself with respect, I think, is a really great way to start building that self-trust.
God, I love that.
And then the second thing, I love the alignment piece, something that I talk about a lot. And I'm not sure if that's completely opposite of the human design. If it is, great, we can have a good discussion. But I talk about the difference between essentialism and existentialism. Like essentialism in this kind of, it's like you find your essence that is already fully formed. Existentialism is very much you exist and then you form your essence. And so for me, it's less about finding, it's more about creating. And that creation is through that alignment. And it's a very proactive, not a passive thing. And it's something that's incredibly fluid. So your sense of self will adjust and edit and look different, but it can remain authentic. So I really hope that people, you know, that I'm not the same person in a decade from now, not because I don't love and respect myself, but because that would mean that I didn't grow and expand the way that I want to. And so I'm not sure how that aligns with the human design, but for me, it's really that alignment and that intentionality. I mean, that intentionality is the only way to have that alignment and to create your sense of self. And so when you said it, that just triggered that thought.
I love that. And from a, it's interesting. Like when I first came to human design, one of the things that I was a bit like, cause I kind of put it down two times before I ran with it. One of the things I didn't love was that it lacked the potential for growth because a lot of the language was very, very constrictive, very negative, all sorts of things. And that was my biggest problem with it because, you know, at the end of the day, I was a performance coach. So it was all about,
about
growing and evolving and doing that. And I'm like, nah, don't tell me that I am that, you know, I'm not, I don't like anything. I don't like any profiling tool, even though I use them a lot. Nothing that puts people in a box. I want to know the potential. I want to know the challenge and then, you know, help the person to step into those things and bring it to life in their own way. Now with human design, we also have this beautiful, I don't know if you've ever heard of the gene keys.
No.
You should totally look them up. Richard, okay. He's epic.
Okay.
And anyway, the gene keys actually works in with human design. And what the gene keys brings is exactly what you're talking about, is this evolution. So let's say when we talk about, let's talk about your design for a moment. And I'm going to just give you an example. I'm just going to quickly open this document.
It's so fun.
So with, and again, it'll probably sound a little bit like mumbo jumbo. Don't worry about it. Just go with it.
Okay.
Because I'm using all of the, you know, human design jargon. So we bring the gene keys into it. And what the gene keys brings, as I said, is this journey. Okay. So for you specifically, in your personality sun, this is an area of your chart that is, in the gene keys, it's called your life's work. It's almost like all the energies and the essence, the themes, the superpowers, the talents, all of it filter out of this energy. And you have it in the gate or gene key 46. So what's really cool about the gene keys is it gives us this journey from shadow to gift to the siddhic state, which is the enlightened state. So all of a sudden it gives you this journey, and the shadow is always the fear expression. It's the when we're trapped in our mind expression. The gift, to access the gift, we have to go through the shadow because there's no avoiding the shadow. We have to go through it. So we learn it, we accept it, we acknowledge it. Yes, that is a part of me. And then we go through to the gift. And then once we are in the gift and we're expressing the gift, then we get these moments of enlightenment, which is the siddhic state. So for you, with your 46, you've got the shadow of seriousness. So when you're in your mind, when you're afraid, maybe often before you sort of kicked off your healing journey, you may have found that you were in this state of being overly serious about things. Does that resonate at all?
Yeah, definitely. Very serious, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I love that. So your gift in this gate or gene key is delight. So it's going from this journey of like the mind wants to stay in control by being really serious, but the heart is like, nope. We're gonna open the heart up and we're gonna move into this state of delight. And that comes from acceptance. It's acceptance of, okay, well, this shit thing's happening, or like you just said before, I don't necessarily like or love myself right now, but I can respect myself. So it's this acceptance piece. And the more you step into this acceptance piece, the more delight you experience. Does that resonate with you?
Totally. I just love how we have different language. A big thing for me now is telling people to take responsibility for their life, but not take their life too seriously. And the fact that I preach now, like, don't take your life too seriously, is so funny hearing this journey, because it's very much that. It is like delight and the passion and the tasting of life rather than the seriousness and the fear that consumes a lot of people. So yes, totally.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that you talk about don't being too serious. I love it so much. So yeah, so within human design, that's where, or the gene keys, like I've created transformational human design that puts all of this together with behavioral coaching and those sort of models that really help people step into, you know, their greatest potential. I think that's one of the beauties of human design, is it actually gives you a lot more clarity of purpose and potential, because that was one of the things that used to get me stuck. Because I was kind of like, but I want to do all the things, you know, I want my purpose to be everything. And ultimately I can be all of me, but I can't be everyone. So it really helped me to solidify that. But I would love to talk about purpose. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about purpose. And I know you talk about it a lot in your work. What is purpose, just straight off the bat, what does it mean to you? When you talk about purpose, what are you specifically talking about?
The way you live your life So what I mean by that is I don't think purpose and meaning is a cognitive thing. Like the second you're asking yourself, what is my purpose? It means you're not living it. So I think that, so I do think that inherently purpose and meaning are actually the way we express our existence. Now it's also the big why. Why am I alive? Why am I here? And what is the point? And so that's, I think, a question everyone has felt to varying degrees. That's also a question that can crush you because, you know, if you don't know why you're alive, you know, from an existential point of view, that can lead to a lot of, it has led to a lot of suicide. Not knowing why you're alive in the most extreme sort of way makes you go, well, that means I shouldn't be, or that means it's okay not to be. And so I think it's a really, really serious question that we should daily ask ourselves. And it's something that I kind of try to shift in the book was, I don't think there is one large overarching meaning. I think the way you live your life in small, meaningful ways builds this ta-da meaning before you die. Like you'll look back and you'll go, I had a meaningful life. But I think because meaning is so closely tied to your sense of identity, as you change and as you evolve, so will your meaning. And so I know a lot of people who had a very clear meaning in their early 20s, early 30s, and then they kept living it out even though it stopped being meaningful to them. And sometimes, you know, people have really admirable things that give them meaning, but just because it's admirable, just because it's helpful, just because it's profound does not mean it's yours. And I think that's the one thing that you have to keep reassessing of like, is this giving me meaning or not? And I feel like I've had the weirdest experience with that because I don't even remember in my mind when I decided to be a psych. I just always knew. And I'm guessing from like when I was 9 and, you know, lived through the bombings, I was like, what makes people tick? And it has brought me so much profound meaning. My work has brought me so much profound meaning, but that's also a double-edged sword of finding meaning. Sometimes I would identify that I only found meaning in my work. And that's also incredibly unhealthy and dysregulating. And so understanding like, what is it to live a meaningful life? And you'll have different meanings in different roles. And are they congruent? It's a whole journey.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it also falls into what you were saying at the beginning, you know, like we have to be conscious that what gives someone else meaning versus what gives us meaning are two very different things. You know, if we grow up in a certain sector of society, maybe our parents are, they do a lot of giving back to different groups or whatever it is. I can't even articulate. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with my language right now.
Love it.
But, you know, like the meaning itself, we also have to be very conscious. And again, with human design, we have our own language around that, especially for you being a generator. It's all about what lights you up. And I think one of the challenges mm-hmm. as we get out of our conditioned mind is that, if we follow what lights us up, then we're going to be doing frivolous things or things that don't matter. But that's absolutely not true. You know, like I talk a lot about my purpose journey, really like kicking into high gear at, you know, just after my diagnosis with depression and panic disorder. Like this is 20 years ago now. And you know, I'm on my knees and I'm screaming at the sky. I'm like, for God's sake, universe, like this is not me. I don't understand. And just having this very profound moment of hearing, it's not all about you, Emma. It's for others. And like knowing in that moment wow. that healing myself was so much more about, it was just as much about me as it was about the people I would help in the future. And that my purpose on that, from that moment was like, oh, you know, like I thought purpose was that shiny thing that feels great all the time, but it's not. It's that thing that your heart's like, I just have to. You know, it lights me up. It's a thing I want to do this. I want to move through this challenge. I want to overcome this thing. And especially because me, I'm a line 5. I want to give it to everybody. I want to teach everybody else. So I love what you were saying. I think that's so important to also understand that meaning is going to shift and change. I mean, especially being women, for example, I've got a 16 and 12-year-old son, you know, like shifting from an advertising career to having children to becoming an entrepreneur. Like, my meaning has shifted along the way, and not being overly attached to, as you said, though, the identity that goes with that. Like, I had a massive identity crisis when I had my first son, as many women do, because I was someone, I mattered in the advertising industry, and then all of a sudden it's just me and this baby, and I'm like, who am I? So it's so important. It's so important to be able to have that fluidity with your meaning and your purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, you said so many things and drives me nuts that because I was so into it, I can't remember a single thing I wanted to say because I was like, oh my God, that, oh my God, that. But I do think it's incredibly important to not over-identify with one role. And this is why I think when one role consumes you, or when you become maybe a parent, I see this all the time, it's if your meaning was attached to everything but you, it, then that's an issue. For example, if you got your meaning from the way that you did your job and now you no longer have your job, you're having a crisis. And this happened during COVID a lot. People started talking about existential crises during COVID because everything that they quote unquote gave them meaning, or they thought that it gave them meaning and maybe did give them meaning, was taken away. They couldn't see family. They couldn't see friends. They couldn't do well at their job. They couldn't go hang out at bars. So everything that was meaningful to them was taken away. And a lot of people went, well, now I don't have any inherent meaning. I don't know what to do. And I found that such an interesting and difficult phase in our society, because it is hard when you can't express yourself. Meaning is through expression. And when you don't have the chance to express your unique meaning, it feels meaningless.
Yeah. And, you know, people just get lost and they fall down that hole of who am I, which is, you know, it's a hard hole to go down. It's a great one, you know, when you pop on the other side, but it's definitely a hugely transformational journey for sure.
I remember. Sorry. Service. I love that you're talking. I have never found someone who found profound meaning outside of a type of service. I would really like to hear your thoughts on it. It's something that I've just noticed now for a decade of my work. True, genuine meaning. People think it's the shiny thing that will give them meaning. People think that meaning will feel good all the time. And yet I find that people who genuinely feel fulfilled are those who are constantly giving. And sometimes that's not easy. And there is a element of servanthood, whatever that means. And it's almost like giving back to humanity. And I think that that's such a cool thing to think about if you're someone struggling with meaninglessness, or even people with depression. Sometimes we'll recommend that they go and serve at a soup kitchen. And feel useful and feel like there is meaning to them being alive. And so I think that that's a really fascinating thing to keep in mind, that as humans, we are really interconnected. And there is something really powerful about that when it comes to meaning and serving. And I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. And I also loved the thought that you said, we believe that if we followed every inner yes or every excitement, that we would just become hedonistic, or that we would run wild and ruin our lives. And I think that speaks to the lack of trust. I think if you understood that at your core, the only thing that lights you up is genuine authenticity and your genuine essence, you wouldn't be so scared of it. And I think so many of us are scared or can't discern the cues from impulse to authenticity. And this is why we don't want to lean into like, wow, it lights me up, I should do it. When I think when you have that trust and that discernment, you're able to go, wow, this lights me up. This is the path. And that's the coolest sort of feeling. I remembered things. I'm sorry. I was so passionate about what you said. I was like, I need to say it.
It's so good. Yeah, it's so good. I love it. I'm so glad you said it. And, you know, I want to respond to that as well, because I think one of the things that is really important about service through the frame of human design, we actually look at, there's some of us, more of us is self-focused. It's what we call a personal profile. You've actually got a personal profile, but you've got the anomaly that sits in the middle. So you're a bit of both. And a personal profile focuses first inward. Okay, what is my journey? They have their journey. Then they go outward. Transpersonal profile, they actually go external first. So people will trigger something for them, then they will go through a process, and then whatever that process is, they'll go and share that again. I often use the metaphor of depression. I'm a personal profile. When I was diagnosed, I went inward. It was about my journey. I read thousands of books. I did the things. I healed myself. But if a person with a transpersonal profile was diagnosed with depression, then we'd recommend go and find someone else with depression and help them, because you'll heal yourself through that process. And I think ultimately what you said, that trust piece, is whether we're personal or transpersonal doesn't matter, because ultimately we're going to take it out into the world. And I always think of in Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, he talks about from our cells, the thing that our cells are here to do are create connection and community. And everything upward of that is all about creating connection and community. And ultimately, as humans, that's what we want to do. We want to connect. We want to be together, serve each other, support each other, because in us giving, we're receiving. And I think that that's so much of this journey that we're on right now. Like I often talk about, we're in the messy middle where, you know, change can get messy in the middle part where there's all of these old things breaking down, and we're moving to, in human design, the language we use is this new paradigm. However, right now, we have to trust ourselves and our own decisions even more than ever before, because we can't look outside for the guidance and the what's correct for us. We really are starting to learn that, no, what is correct for us sits within us. And as you said, the more aligned we get to that, the more we just want to connect and we want to serve and we want to support others, you know?
Absolutely. Wow. Well, seems like we have a lot of language to say the same thing, which I think in psychology is very common, and every theory has a really unique spin and more depth in certain areas. But I kind of love that at the end of the day, we've all noticed this thread of like, yep, this is humanity. Great.
I love it. You know, I started very sciencey, and I remember reading like all of the sciencey books, that, you know, the neuroscience, everything to do with behavior. Then I was like into quantum physics, and obviously I was started to read all the spiritual books and all the things. And I'm like, hang on a second, you're all saying the same thing. Everybody is saying the same thing, you know? Like, it's that moment of, yeah, we've all got this. It doesn't matter what frame we're looking through. We're all heading there.
I love it, because I also started in neuroscience and then I ended in existentialism. And so it's like, it seems really far in the spectrum, but then you go, wow, no, actually it's the same thing. And I think it's amazing.
I love it. Let's talk about your book, because I'm very conscious of your time and I'm going to have to let you go soon. Let's talk about the book. When did the book come out? It's recent, isn't it? I wish I had it in front of me.
End of September. So like 3 months ago or so, four.
Amazing. And how's it going? How's the whole process of it? Was it your first book?
It was my first book, yes. How is it? The writing it was amazing. It was definitely one of the hardest things to write, because I think in order to, you know, as a teacher, I feel like you really need to understand it before you can teach it. And so the amount of learning that I did, the amount of processing I did in order to articulate it in a way that made sense to others, you know, it felt like mini therapy to myself. And it was amazing. So that part was really great. I remember the night before it came out, it felt a little bit like I was going, like I was going to streak in Times Square. It felt very vulnerable. And I think people were surprised by that, because it's, you know, I write content all the time. I'm open to criticism all the time. I'm on social media, but there was something very personal about this book, just because I'm an incredibly private person. This is the first time I ever spoke about my story. It's the first time I talked about my divorce. It's the first time I talked about the wars, and most people didn't even know I was Serbian. Everyone assumed I was American, and actually I'm Serbian Canadian. I'm not even American, but it's just so interesting that it was putting myself out there and explaining ideas that meant so much to me, that part was really nerve-wracking, and you never know how it's going to be received. And I didn't want to write a book. My priority wasn't to make people feel good. My priority was to, yeah, you know, and that's a hard sell. I say hard truths, but I really mean it. This book is sometimes, you know, people are like, I read a chapter and then I sat there and cried and just thought about it for a second. And next week I went and read another, and then others read in 36 hours. So it really depends how it lands for you. But For me, I just really wanted it to be helpful. Above all else, you don't need to like me. I just want it to trigger something in you. And I want you to live a life that you want. And I want you to have a meaningful existence. Even if that comes from you being like, this is dumb, I hate this. And then like 30 years later, you're like, remember that one question? So my whole thing was, I really want this to be, to evoke something, to provoke something, and to hopefully make a change.
I love that. For everyone listening, the book is called It's On Me. And I've not read it yet, but I will. And I think that what's so powerful about what you said, you're welcome. If I reflect back on my journey, was the greatest learnings for me, the greatest breakthroughs, the greatest jumps were always in those times where I took full responsibility. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to do it. I was very comfortable in my little victim outfit, you know. But it's like that was the time that things shifted and changed. So I'm very, you know, no BS, very direct about things. So I think I'm going to love it. I definitely need to get onto it.
I really hope so. And I think responsibility is a conversation that is lacking in mental health right now. Whew, feels scary even just saying that, but it's lacking. It's massively. And even, you know, sometimes I'll read things and I'll be like, but where's the personal responsibility? How have we become a victimized generation? Sorry, a victimized generation. Like, why? Everything is happening to us. And I just found when you take away responsibility, you take away agency. There's no agency without responsibility. And so now we're watching people figure out what's wrong with them, but then also just internalize it and think that they can't do anything about it. And I know that that's not the intent, but that's kind of how things have spiraled out of control lately. And I think I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write literally a book on responsibility, and the book is on self-loss. But I think that's a life-changing thing. And as you said, if I didn't take responsibility for my life, I wouldn't have one. And it's the number one thing that I teach my clients.
Oh my goodness. I love that. No wonder we get along, because it's the number one.
I know.
And it's that thing, like, for me, I remember getting my diagnosis of depression and panic disorder and him just saying, well, you're going to live with this forever, but you'll learn to manage it. And I was like, nope, that's not an option.
Nope.
That's just not an option. And I think that one of my dear friends, actually the mentor I was just referring to earlier, he actually sat on the board of Victoria for the mental health board, and we were out at dinner one time. He was telling me all about these things, and he asked for my opinion, and I just said, you're not going to like my opinion. He goes, why? Like, this is your space. This is what you do. Like, you're going to love this. And I'm like, well, I think that you're disempowering everybody. I think you're telling everyone that they're born with a disease that they can't do anything about, and that's total bullshit. Like, yep, it might be a learned behavior that's been passed down generation to generation to generation unconsciously without you realizing it, but it doesn't mean you have no power over it. And I just went straight into, like, you know, you don't teach people how to meditate. You don't teach people about their belief systems. You don't teach them people how to heal their trauma. You don't teach people all of these things. You just tell them they need to be medicated, and that's just not true. So for me, I'm very passionate about empowering people, and that everybody's journey is different. You know, like, my journey was my journey, and yep, I probably took longer than a lot of other people took. And you know, I decided I was medicated for 2 minutes and it just didn't feel right for me, so I didn't go down that road. But the thing that I always want to say is, like, you have to do you. You have to follow your path. And on that path, know that you have way more power than you think you do. So just, you know, ask for the help, call it in. You'll get where you want to go. You've got that power within you.
I love that so much. And I understand that people have contexts which limit their freedom, which limits their responsibility. And, you know, I try to bring nuance to that discussion in the book. But you're right. Ultimately, I think we always have responsibility, and I think we always have a degree of freedom, and we just need to be brave enough to do something with it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we should leave it right there. That was such a beautiful statement. Dr. Sarah Kubrick, sorry, nearly couldn't pronounce your name there for a moment.
That's okay.
Thank you so much for being here. I wish we had another hour to talk about it. I'm so curious about your childhood. I'd love to hear about Serbia and, you know, all the things that, you know, because 0 to 7, these are the things that form you as an adult. I would be so fascinated to know more. So maybe we'll have to have you back one time.
Oh my gosh, I would absolutely love that. I love chatting with you. I love learning from you. I'm just going to go look up some things now. And thank you so much for having me. And of course, I would come back in a heartbeat. So let me know.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll book it in. Where can people find you on Instagram, your website, podcasts, whatever? Tell them where they can find you and the book.
Yeah. So my biggest platform where I'm the most active is Instagram. So that's at millennial.therapist. You can buy my book anywhere books are sold. I think it's being translated in 16 languages at the moment. So it should be everywhere, hopefully. I also have a Substack, Sarah Kubrick. It's called Notes from My Phone. And that I dive more into these sorts of serious existential sorts of questions. And it's more of an essay form. So if you're interested in that, check it out. And my website is sarah-kubrick.com.
Amazing. Well, thanks again for being here. It's just been so much fun, and we will definitely get you back in as soon as we can. And
amazing.
Thanks for your time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. I trust you got what you needed from today's episode. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to having you on the next one. Bye for now. Thanks, everyone, for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast, or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.